Dieter and Hutch going down on a Tuesday. Is it Tuesday? What day is it?
It is.
What month is it?
It is. The whole schedule's had me messed up. Who knows?
Dude, I've been in a car for the last 2 days. I woke up in Reading this morning. Nothing good is happening when you wake up in Reading in the morning. No offense to our fine listeners in Reading, all two of you. Let the militia know that we mean no offense. Regardless, Jake Hutchinson of Odyssey 95.7 of the game and the Dieter and Hutch podcast has been holding it down at 49ers training camp while I have been holding down my disdain for family vacations. And I'm so tired. How am I more tired after vacation? Jake, first off, I don't spend much time on the tweet machines, but today was one of those days where you have to make an exception because, you know, you got baseball moves that are happening left and right, front and center.
Yeah.
I gots to know who the player who's going to be named later is. And among so many things that are coming across the timeline on the burner account, oh, yeah, still got one. Nice. I see that Brock Purdy is out here just throwing picks, just throwing interceptions like they're going out of business. Like Mark Canna, they're just tossing them in there. And I'm wondering, Jake, what the hell happened with Brock Purdy at 49ers practice today? Because it was, what, four out of his last five throws during some drill? I don't know what drill, you can enlighten me, were picks.
So where I'll start with this is Purdy got off to a good start. Some people got a little bit ahead of themselves. I'm sure you can do your research.
I can only imagine.
Got very, very excited about Mr. Purdy's performance.
Is this a general statement on like training camp or like today's performance?
Today specifically.
Okay.
Yeah, some tweets went out. And he threw a great...
I was told that there would be no tweets from the practice field. I read the actual agreement.
Well, when it's open practice...
I say kick them out.
When it's open practice, you're allowed to do whatever. When fans are in there, you can do whatever. But it started off...
tomorrow.
Like his first pass of the day was a hospital ball to Elijah Mitchell, where Jair Brown almost, you know, murdered him. Okay. But after that, he looked pretty good. Yeah, he threw a go ball to Debo for a touchdown. That was stellar.
Perfectly love to see placed. That.
Been missing on a couple of those, which is usual for training camp. Hit on that one. Okay. Later, hit Christian McCaffrey on a wheel down left sideline. Gorgeous, ooh, perfectly weighted ball. Looked good.
Love the
looked
wheel.
Good for the most part. The interceptions. Baby. Interceptions. One was behind Debo. I think that was Jair Brown that got that. His worst of the day was Jimmy G. It was just...
Oh, wow.
Linebacker. Demetrius Flanagan fouls there, and you going, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it, and then throwing it right to him. That was pretty bad.
The full NCAA 10, where it's just right there. Linebacker's 10 feet tall.
Yeah. The other two, less bad. Deep ball to Juwan Jennings that Jennings maybe should have caught. I think it was... Okay. I think it was the two safeties. I think I was right there, and I... Somehow. I know Jair Brown was in.
They
think
have
it was Odom
two safeties?
Who got the pick. Apparently. And the ball bounced off Jennings and then got intercepted.
Maintained.
That one wasn't on Purdy. Whatever. Last one was like one of the worst balls I've ever seen from him. But I think what happened was, based on Aaron Banks' reaction, that like I think Banks got pushed like almost into him.
That's his thing, right?
Which is just like...
Par for the course, my friend.
No one's supposed to like... create pressure or anything that gets that close to the quarterback because it was like 2 or 3 feet away from Debo, made no sense. So that was the last one.
I'm sure other teams will gladly pick up on that. Well, you know, we're not allowed to give pressure.
I'm just saying a quarterback in training camp's not expecting to get, you know, sat on.
What I'm personally hoping for, Jake, is that this happens every day in perpetuity so that we have something to talk about because, I'm not going to lie to you. I don't give a shit. I don't like not in general. Like I find training camp to be fascinating and far more interesting than it probably actually is. But the idea that Brock Purdy's throwing interceptions in training camp, like if that's a freak out occurrence, so be it. Because you know what? The dude has said time and time again, he's out there just trying shit out. That's what he's doing.
Let me be clear. Let me give like a 1 minute spiel.
Give me the feel.
Just on turnovers, just on interceptions, training camp. Time, it's a time to absolutely make mistakes. You should make mistakes. Coaches kind of encourage it. Mm-hmm. You know, we were talking to Chris Foerster. He's like, yeah, one-on-ones drive me crazy because guys are working on things. And then you in the media pointed out with Brock Purdy throwing interceptions, whatever, you know, he's done it before. Quarterbacks throw interceptions all the time. You're also just
do it again.
You're also just trying to thread the ball in there. You're trying to see what happens, what you can get away with. And so you throw interceptions. Now, if he starts showing those habits where he's just throwing Jimmy G interceptions over the middle, then I'll panic. But for now, it's training camp. It happens. It's all good.
I mean, my listen, I had no problem when people brought up Jimmy G throwing interceptions or Trey Lance throwing interceptions, because when they'd get in a game, they'd do the same shit. But Brock Purdy, we have a case study now. I think, I don't know if it's a large enough sample size. I don't believe he's played 50 NFL games yet, but it's a nice chunk. I mean, enough to know that you're about to pay this guy a ton of money.
Right.
Spending two NFC championship games. Like, he's played in a Super Bowl. Like, you kind of know what this dude's about. And he's done this, albeit under much different circumstances, the prior two times. Like, he's done this in both of his prior training camps. He's out there. And he's just slanging the thing for the sake of slanging the thing so that he knows, hey, maybe I can try that in a game. Or, oh, nope, can't do that again. And he has the cognitive ability to be able to compartmentalize that and organize it and know, hey, these are the things I can and cannot do, which is a superpower if you're a quarterback. Not doing things that you cannot do is a pretty valuable thing to be able to do as a quarterback. And Brock Purdy is legitimately trying it out. Now, I heard from folks, and including Jimmy in training camp, I'm just trying stuff out. Dude, it sure looks like you're doing the same stuff in a game. So either you're trying stuff out in a game, which is bad news, or guess what? You probably weren't trying anything out.
Jimmy couldn't read shit.
He couldn't read a field. He couldn't read
field. You know, listen, I think
we call him one read Jimmy for a reason.
Kyle Shanahan gets a lot of shit for a lot of reasons, some of which are very fair. Most of which are exaggerated and overblown.
No,
because he didn't come through in the big game and has made like public mistakes that, you know, will get you.
It was still egregious that they took the ball in overtime, but that's neither here nor
there. I will rip him for that as much as anyone. Doesn't make any sense. The Chiefs laughed.
Hey, you know what? We should definitely give Patrick Mahomes a chance to beat us.
But they almost won a Super Bowl with Jimmy Garoppolo.
Granted, yes, they did.
Jimmy Garoppolo's body broke down more and more and more over time. And at one point, Jimmy was competent and he was above average for at least 1 year. Like, actually,
he was a starting caliber NFL quarterback, low level starting NFL caliber quarterback with a great team and especially great defense around him and a great coach that could make the most out of it. Jared Goff played an NFC championship game last year. I mean, stuff happens.
But when you realize, like, oh, that's what they were working with for half a decade, guy who's just like, Middle, throws the go ball, makes Devontae Adams want to quit the sport of football because he just can't hit him. Like, that's what they were working with. So
that's right.
I think Kyle should probably get a little bit of credit for how good they were during that period.
I there's no question about that, Kyle. And listen, I'm done having the conversation, much less the argument, about if Kyle Shanahan's a good head coach or not.
Yeah.
Like, dude, as I've said again, there's one team in the NFL that wouldn't trade head coaches straight up right now.
Yeah.
And by the way, Kansas City would. They would do the trade because Kyle Shanahan, it'd be the Rams. That's the one team that wouldn't do it. It's the only team that would say, no, we're good.
I thought you were going to say Kansas City, but Reed is maybe going to retire. So
that's what I'm saying. Kansas City's like, how many more years of Andy Reed do we have? Well, we know we can get 20 of Kyle Shanahan. Like, dude, who wouldn't? Well, Miami really likes Mike McDaniel. Know who's better than Mike McDaniel? The guy who taught him everything he knows. Mike LaFleur up there in Green Bay. You don't think that they would rather have the sensei? Like, come on. Like, what are we talking about? The 49ers were awesome last year. They were awesome. And they ultimately showed some vulnerabilities that showed up at the very worst time. Playoffs, their incompetence at defensive coordinator really bit them in the ass. and their inability and Kyle Shanahan's inability to get pragmatic in the Super Bowl proved problematic. By the way, they had a kicker that missed, you know, had a big kick, also missed one. Like, those were things that were issues throughout the season, right? Anything that really could have gone wrong for the 49ers did go wrong in the Super Bowl, and it still went to overtime. So this is a very good football team, and Kyle Shanahan's a very good head coach. I'm going to say this, though, Jake, and then we will pivot back into training camp. I have long lauded Kyle Shanahan's ability to build a culture in San Francisco because I was here when he showed up. And I remember distinctly the years preceding Kyle Shanahan showing up and the turnaround in the course of one season, even when they sucked ass, and they sucked ass that first season. There is no kinder way to put it. They lost their first eight games, and they should have lost even more than that. The culture that he was able to build in 1 year, which eventually turned into a team in 2019 that drafted second overall in April and went to the Super Bowl the following January, February, was incredible. The culture of this operation maintains at that level. This is going to be the hardest test he has had since that initial onboarding. Maintaining the culture of this team amid the Brandon Ayuk situation, amid Brock Purdy's looming massive contract, amid the era of austerity, which is already started to a degree, amid a defense that is unquestionably going to take a step back and has a shadow defensive coordinator, so that's just weird, amid the fact that this team is tired, because it's not just, hey, they went to the Super Bowl last year, now they got to go back. Think about how taxing last year was and how we all talked about, well, the only things that matter are the game against Philadelphia and then the NFC Championship game again. That's the only things that mattered. And now it's just simply Super Bowl. Well, clearly that game didn't matter because they shat their pants within the first 3 minutes. So, but you're right. You're right. That's a fair point. It's a fair point. Suffice it to say, everyone at the beginning of the season was thinking towards the end of January from the get-go, right?
Yep.
That's and when you've done that year in and year out, that is a big thing to overcome. You know, NBA players, Draymond Green loved telling me, loved telling anybody, because Draymond Green loves telling people stuff. Draymond Green says the regular season is a season. The playoffs are a season. Those games come in at 2, 3, 4X. Football, it's the same thing. The regular season is the season. And then the playoffs, whether you're playing three games, five games, whatever, is a full season. And the 49ers have played a lot of full seasons over the last couple of years. Even when they had Jimmy Garoppolo playing on an arena football league field,
yeah, you know,
20 yards wide and 45 yards deep or whatever. That was his field. Even when that was happening, they were going to NFC Championship games. They were in it every year. And the wear and tear of all of this success amid a pretty clear and evident mandate that it's now or never, I think is going to test this team unlike they have been tested before. And I'm deeply skeptical from a baseline level of I'm skeptical about everything. So I'm going to be skeptical about this for sure. But I'm extremely skeptical that amid all of that fatigue, mental and physical, amid the all or nothing nature of it, and amid all the extra nonsense that's happening right now, they can get over that hump. Here's the one thing I'm not concerned about: the fucking quarterback. I'm not concerned about the head coach being a high-quality play caller who can put this team in the best position to not just score points, but score points at record levels. And I'm not concerned at all about the quarterback. Not concerned about there's a lot of things I'm not – those two guys are at the top of the list. And by the way, this is a league that is predicated success on having your head coach and your quarterback not only being exceptional, but being in lockstep. They're good. They're good. And that's why Brock Purdy's going to make $60 million. Now, I got to ask you something about that shadow defensive coordinator, because I'm also scrolling through that Twitter machine and Diamador Lenore is out here making some comments. Jake, talk to me about Diamador Lenore and his new relationship with Brandon Staley, shadow defensive coordinator. By the way, before you get into that, is shadow defensive coordinator like confirmed at this point?
I mean, I think it's fair. Like I think it's fair. I think he's got a lot of weight.
Let's not lie. It's a great bit, and it's never going to die.
It's also like You know, why, that's why they brought him in there, because they were like, listen, we want a guy who's been in here and we don't want to totally shake things up, but also like do whatever you want to do. Let that brain run wild, figure out what the best thing is for this. And also that lets him not have to do as much of the day to day of running a defense. Just figure out like big brain schematic nonsense.
He's the Heritage Foundation of defense. He just gets to brain, you know, he gets to be a think tank.
God, apparently.
What's his project 2025?
God, it's deep. All the only DBs on the field. No linebackers. Just
Jake. Don't joke about things like that, because that was Dieter Kurtenbach 11 years old. And I go, make the entire defense safeties.
Yeah.
Four down linemen and everyone else is a safety. And one day in my lifetime, probably before I'm 40, the dream will become a reality. In less than 30 years, my vision will be seen.
Okay. Exactly.
So Amador Lenore, he's a defensive back. So obviously Brandon Staley loves him, and he loves Brandon Staley.
So Amador Lenore, I asked him, I was like, because I've been watching Staley work specifically with Lenore. Just at the start of practice, just for context, there's a little bit of like, you've got most of the cornerbacks have to work with special teams. Lenore and Charvarius Ward, and I think Jair Brown maybe, they sort of do their own thing. And so Ward is just warming up and Lenore's warming up. And during that time, Staley is like really coaching up Lenore. So I asked him about that relationship, and he said, he's a genius. End quote. He's a genius. Like, has taught him a ton.
Yeah.
And what he also said, and I'm just going to pull up.
Yeah, let's make sure we have the quote here. Yeah, the explicit quote.
He goes, he's a genius. I really, really respect him as a coach, as a person. The joy he brings to our room, and with just the knowledge, you know, of teaching us so many things, it's a blessing to have him here. And then our boy Nick Wagner was like, what specifically? So the first thing he mentioned is angles, like angles, I think, in coverage and you know, pursuit to the ball. But the more interesting part was, and this is a quote, he kind of told me the percentages of you getting a fade every down, it's less likely. So why would you play that with the start of the downs? Actually think when you're out there. You already got the talent. Just use your brain and the plays will come.
So Brandon Staley used his brain once, and Amador Lenore is like, how does this guy do it?
It's a little bit of a funny quote, but like the fact
I get what he's saying though. Yeah.
Working on the percentages of like, hey, you're not going to get this route here. Like you know, there's a limited amount that you're going to face. So prepare for that. It's pretty high
fucking
praise.
Fade out of the slot.
Yeah. It's pretty high praise. Right off the rip for a guy he's been working with not that long. What do you make of that?
I actually don't find it terribly surprising that Lenore and Staley have spent a good deal of time together, because he's the one player on the field that has to kind of know the entire field, right? Charvarius Ward only has to think about one half of the field. I mean, at that, maybe even just a third. I would like to get Jair Brown in with Staley a lot more, if this is in fact the way that he teaches, you and I have never once questioned Brandon Staley's acumen as a football coach. Everyone that I've talked to who has known him or been around him is like, this guy's brilliant. He's really good. But there is this element, and we've talked about this a million times over the years, of being a head coach in the league, which is you have to be a leader of men. And Brandon Staley is the smartest guy in the room. Oftentimes, he needs to feel like the smartest guy in the room. And oftentimes, he projects some of the insecurities of, hey, being the smartest guy in the room doesn't win the room for me, onto other guys. And so it created a very strange, and the word that was used to describe him, hokey dynamic. And
yeah, that's right.
That's why he's not a head coach in this league anymore, right? Say what you will about Jim Harbaugh. By the way, you know, when you get NFL head coaches and you replace somebody, typically it's the exact opposite. Well, Jim Harbaugh is big and weird and strange.
Not the RVs. So obviously,
the RVs
Jim
is
Harbaugh.
My favorite video of the summer.
And I think it's Jim Harbaugh and Wink Martindale, and Dieter sent it to me.
Greg Roman had 10 times nicer RV than Jim Harbaugh,
exactly,
as they live in this trailer park by the beach.
But the other video I saw is they're doing, they have these like upgraded version. It's basically tires where you flip the tire. Okay. But because it's, you know, 2024, they have like versions that are more direct that don't just like flop and wobble sideways. It's okay. So you can pick it up vertically. Okay. There's a video of Justin Herbert doing that. And right behind him is Jim Harbaugh.
Just doing it, wearing some khakis.
Yeah. Just getting after it.
Jim Harbaugh like deeply loves football. He loves contact.
Too much.
he loves the camaraderie of man. There's just like, he's the ultimate sicko. He's the ultimate sicko. And you know what? Yeah. Here's the deal. He is a very sharp guy. There's no question about that. Like, I'm not saying Jim Harbaugh is some dumbass. He isn't. He's a very sharp guy, but he's weird and he loves football too much. And he loves like being with the guys and, you know, just like men being men and all this stuff. And it's just like, and anyone else, if there was an ounce of inauthenticity to it, if it felt like it was being put on for a second, you'd be like, this dude is mentally insane.
Yeah. Jim Harbaugh's a guy that if you were roommates with him, you would wake up across the room on the day of the game and he would be standing over you, smiling ear to ear, going, it's a beautiful day for a game, brother. And he'll
be
mean it.
Singing the fight song at you. And and all of this to say that Brandon Staley isn't a rah-rah guy. There is a level of inauthenticity with him in the sense of he has to put it on a little bit to be a leader of men. That's just, it wasn't the role made for him, but he's so smart that people go, well, I want him leading the team because we want that intelligence working for us. And they see a guy like a Kyle Shanahan or they see a guy like a Mike McDaniel and they see these things. And again, it's a very fine line and you really don't know until you're in the fire of battle if a guy has it or if he doesn't. And frankly, we were questioning that about both of those head coaches, just to name two of them, as they came into those roles. Could Mike McDaniel get the accountability and buy-in from players because he's 5'5" and weighs 130 pounds? Can Kyle Shanahan
he's just ripping vapes?
Yeah, right. And Kyle Shanahan, like we were asking, like can he do it? He's, you know, let's be real. Like his dad was the famous Shanahan to that point. You know, is he just in this job because daddy, you know, is a Hall of Fame head coach? All these things. And both of those questions have been squashed with Brandon Staley. They persist and maybe he gets another shot at it. Honestly, I think this has worked out great for the 49ers in that they figured out a role as ambiguous and strange and as much of a bit as it might be for us. Like they figured out a role that allows him to get a lot of credit without having to be in the spotlight. And the issue isn't that he doesn't have the ability to do the job. The issue is all the other things that come with bigger jobs, like being in the spotlight, having to be a leader of men. He can just let his football acumen do its job. And that is, he's got more of that than he knows what to do with, frankly. Yeah, so this is a very good thing for him. Lenore, he loves working with corners. He loves working with nickel guys. He needs to teach Lenore everything. That is your strong side linebacker. As much as I know it's a nickel corner or whatever, that's a strong side linebacker in the NFL. The responsibilities that are on that position are immense. Lenore, I think, is going to end up making himself a whole lot of money thanks to Brandon Staley this upcoming season. Yeah.
Yeah. And the 49ers are about to get themselves priced out of probably both him and Ward and see what
they're comfortable with. The other one they're going to be frustrated by, and it's not the Ward one that they're going to be frustrated by. A good point here from Kawa Chipto. I think Sorensen is working with the safeties. That would make sense. Nick Sorensen is a former NFL safety. And by the way, as much as we do the bit about like Nick Sorensen did not have a good first press conference, I was very vocal about that. I maintained my stance. I was there. It wasn't impressive at all. Those kind of things matter, right? That is the reason he's in the role. It's not because, hey, okay, Brandon Staley's smart. The reason he's not the defensive coordinator is because they don't want him in front of a microphone. So the guy that they did hire to be the defensive coordinator needs to be good in front of the microphone, even if it's just talking to schlubs in the media. That's an important thing because, by the way, Steve Wilks, for some positive qualities that he has, and sometimes he was good in front of the microphone, he was mostly a condescending prick at the microphone, okay? And that's his general attitude towards a lot of things right now, and I know that I'm, you know, burning a bridge here or whatever. I've said this in the moment. He was very condescending, and that's fine. because I guess we don't know shit. But, you know, bite your tongue for 20 minutes a week, eh? You know, then bitch about us. But, you know, there is a song and dance to this that you would be well served to do the steps to. And Steve Wilks didn't want to do it. Nick Sorensen was a willing participant, but didn't in his first go around impress me in that regard. I thought he was much better the second time around. And now having watched a couple of times, he's a very charming, very affable guy. I can see why you'd want him being the leader, at least the face of the operation on defense. I think a lot of good things can come from that one too. And I'm fascinated to see what he does with the safeties. If that is, in fact, I'll get the lowdown once I actually get down to Santa Clara over the next couple of days. But I'm fascinated to see if safeties are, in fact, his bailiwick. If that's what he is indeed working on, that's obviously a very big deal for me, guy who thinks that safeties are destiny. I want to see how good of a coach he is, because I'm going to give him credit here. He's really pulled it around. He set a low bar. He succeeded it again and again and again in an unimportant but important area of his job. The more important area of his job is, can he get Jair Brown to be a high-level, top-half NFC free safety in a cover three system? If he can't do that, this 49ers defense, which is going to take a step back, unquestionably, just because they have lost some talent. No,
I don't know about that.
Okay, lay it on me. Why don't you think they're going to take a step back?
So, I guess it depends if we're talking about the totality of the season. Like, I think they have a really good shot to have a second better half than last year.
Better
I think off
half,
the
yeah.
start, I would expect them to be worse initially last year. I still don't trust Lee Collins. To be honest, looked pretty good. He looked really good today. He like demolished Dominic Pooney like three times, I think.
No part of that sentence surprises me.
Yeah, I think safety is definitely a concern, but Jair Brown has looked pretty good. He's looked around the
Love
ball,
Jair Brown.
Made a couple eraser like tackles where it was going to be a run for a first down or whatever, and he cut it off after seven or eight, which is actually like a safety stopping a run for 8 yards is actually super important. That's been impressive. Devondre Campbell hasn't looked as terrible as I initially expected. Linebacker still worries me. But I think they have some options there that are interesting. Fred Warner, I think what they do with Fred Warner will sort of dictate where this defense goes. Like
We're
how
not
they
gonna know
him.
Until week one.
Right. But like if I'm them, like when you see Fred Warner in training camp, he's around the ball, he's always getting picks. And then in the regular season, it's like he does, like he's around the ball, but a lot of the times he's like carried downfield. You know, having to man like a safety, basically.
Last year, they played literal Tampa 2, like it was 1999, and he was a free safety for a team that did not trust its free safety. That cannot happen again. That was the first and only time that they did it. And yes, Fred Warner is incredible in coverage and all this, and we've talked about the possibility of maybe a linebacker swap with having Fred Warner play off ball on the basis of, hey, you know, we're not trusting. We're not trusting our off-ball linebacker to cover in space, so let's put the guy who can cover in space there, and maybe we lose a little bit in between the tackles. But you know, that's a conversation to be had down the line again. My concern is that Eric Armstead, we can agree they didn't make a mistake in letting him go. Not at the price that he was going to cost. Not with everything that's around. I get it, but. Their run defense was appreciably, he was the only thing holding up their run defense, which means their run defense wasn't good to begin with. And now we have Fred Warner playing 25 yards behind the line of scrimmage. We got Eric Armstead as the only thing holding together the run defense. And it's like, buddy, this is not a good defense. And sure enough, you get into the first half against Green Bay and they're running max protect and still getting yards in bunches. And then you get into the first half against Detroit, who frankly handed the 49ers an opportunity to win that game and then choked away their opportunities to win it in the second half. I mean, the 49ers won that game because they got through a gap that wide.
Yeah, like you could argue they should have lost. Not even argue. Like they should have probably lost both of those games.
They win that game 5 times out of 100, given the circumstances, and they found one of those 5 times. Now there's, you know, a couple other ways they could have won that thing. But what happened was Detroit started feeling the heat a little bit of, hey, we're about to do this thing. Because, I mean, you remember that game. It was euphoria in the stands. There were a lot of Lions fans. They thought it was over. They thought it was over. And frankly, yeah. we're sitting there writing the story
gutting,
as if it's over.
They were gutting the 49ers on every run for 8-12. And the 49ers just like, shit. Like, it's, yeah. playing NCAA football, when you go against an offense and you just can't stop it, you go, it's a scary feeling, brother. You go,
it
oh,
is.
Shit. Yeah. Oh, shit. What That's do we right. do? It doesn't matter what scheme. They're just beating the hell out of you.
So I see a defensive line that's taken a step back. I have. I do. I hope I'm wrong about that because I hate watching mediocre defensive lines, much less bad ones. I think it can only be at worst mediocre given that Nick Bosa's on. But I got questions about it. Leonard Floyd, I got big questions. Fascinated to see what happens.
Yeah, he did get sealed by George Kittle today for about a 20-yard run.
You can do it against worse tight ends, but let me tell you something. I mean, Leonard Floyd was barbecue chicken in the second half of last season, right when Buffalo needed him more. They needed him more than ever. He had one
and also game. And also Drake Jackson. Not that he really would make an impact, but he's out. Basically,
he's done.
Not going to be in training camp. It's over.
His 49ers career is over. He'll sign a 1-year deal with someone somewhere next year. It's done. So we have that on the defensive line. We know linebacker, they're going to have to take a step back. They've gone from Dre Greenlaw to any other human. Dre Greenlaw is a tone setter and the juice bringer for that entire defense. You don't have that now. And frankly, you're probably never going to get what was again, even if Dre Greenlaw does indeed come back. And then, you know, you look at, I love the cornerback situation, loving the cornerback situation, but safety is a massive question mark. Right. And unless the Disney cruises start, you know, going up and down the coast and they can pluck somebody off one again, like it's a big issue. So I look at a defense that last year, as the season progressed, got worse. Okay. I look at a offseason where I don't think that they bolstered outside of one position, cornerback. And I just see a defense that's going to have to make a choice. Either they're going to have to sell out to stop the run because that's the only way they'll be able to do it, leaving themselves extremely susceptible. And basically in one-on-one coverage against the pass, or they can be a true cover three team and just get absolutely gashed against the run, but they'll be able to throw, you know, six back, seven back to stop the pass. And in the modern NFL with RPOs that exist now and, you know, the heavy play action game and just the multiplicity of everything, shout out Michael Keaton. That's death. That's death against competent teams. You can get away with that shit if you're playing the New York Giants. It's death against anybody with a good quarterback and an offensive coordinator that can recognize what the fuck is going on and make an adjustment in game, which is about 20 of the 32 teams right now. And I think we saw it in last year's playoffs. I think we saw it towards the end of last season for the 49ers. And I think we're going to be seeing it a lot more. Now, I do agree with your point. Bad first half, good second half. But on the totality, even if that happens, I think it's going to be a worse defense. And there's no guarantee that the second half is going to be
better. I would also argue the coaching is going to be substantially better. And that's like as much as
that matters.
The talent's not quite there, I think they're going to be smarter just about
that's valid.
What they do with talent, which is,
So I'm with you on that. I mean,
but that's not to say I'm crazy high on this defense. This defense went from being like consistently like top five is I really don't expect that. I think they're still going to be top half defense, but yeah.
Top half. I mean, I think that it would be a really good year if they were a top 10 defense.
Agreed.
I think if they're in the top 10, I consider that like a rousing victory. And
yeah,
they of course have to be a top half.
It's like
defense
a
in order to be a
Fred Warner defensive player of the year type season is what gets them there.
And by the way, I mean, then we get back into the whole thing about like the attrition of playing NFL football. And you think about all of the wear and tear, and you've already lost Ray Greenlaw to a lot of it. And he wasn't even here for the full bore. So it's like,
yeah,
I just get worried about stuff like that. Nick Bosa went out and that entire season went to hell. Just full stop. I know there was a lot. It was a lot more complicated than that.
Right, but that happened. Like, it's over. It's over.
It's over. Yeah, it's over. The equivalent of a quarterback going down. That's what they said. Yeah. So, okay, Brandon Staley's there. He could maybe offset all of my concerns impossible for me to say here. Jake's feeling a lot more confident about it. That's a good place to be. I mean, can't disagree with you, baby. You've been on boots on the ground. You can't know until you go. So here we go. Last thing they did, it's pads on. They did one-on-ones.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Nick Furster ruined offensive line versus defensive line one-on-ones for us in his press conference. What an asshole. Cause I really enjoyed it. And then he's like, y'all don't know. Sometimes, you know, it was just, that really sucked.
To be fair, he rambled around and eventually was like, yeah, it actually can be useful sometimes. But I think his point was that, like, some guy, he's like, listen, sometimes I'm telling a guy, like, to try something, and he's getting cooked. Please don't cook him. I know he's getting his ass kicked.
I mean, even beyond that, it's like, you know, offensive linemen are often tasked with doing a specific thing, and now you're throwing them in an environment where they don't have a job. And so they're just fending for themselves, and it's like, inherently, the way that the 49ers have built this offensive line is that none of these guys can fend for themselves, that they need strict discipline on their roles because that's the only way they can survive. And so I am of the mindset that maybe those aren't as interesting. I think Chris talked me out of it. That said, wide receivers versus defensive backs, that's fair game. Those are still fun.
So, right? From today, hugely disappointing. Renardo Green didn't practice. Ricky Pearsall didn't participate in one-on-ones. So I was standing over there like a fool. What I did see, Juwan Jennings won all three of his reps. And you know how there's that thing about Juwan Jennings where we talked about it, lack of athleticism still separates. I'm watching him and I'm going, what? And then he's just separated. I don't understand.
He just is.
He just wins. Also impressive. It. Two names you're going to be a little surprised by. Rock Ya-Sin, pretty impressive. He forced a PBU on Jennings in 11-on-11s and didn't allow a catch in his 3 1-on-1s. Granted, two are against Ronnie Bell, who is having one of the worst camps of anyone, I think, so far. Can't hold on to much, and that should be the only thing he's supposed to do is hold on to the ball. Last player I was impressed by, and this will probably get 49ers fans, as Rob in the Bay would say, aroused. Tariq Owens is someone who I have seen nothing from so far, not to say bad, just been like whatever. He's got a name that is familiar because his father's
famous initials,
and fans I don't like to rip on fans, but fans have a tendency to, when you got a familiar name, you got a spot in your heart where you go, oh, this could be nice. Naturally, you get excited. But what some people do is they go, oh my God, this guy's incredible. And I haven't seen that. Today, won all three reps, won a ball down the sideline. That was impressive in one-on-ones. And then in 11-on-11s, won a go ball against Rock Ya-Sin for a touchdown. Great catch. Both of them down the sideline were great catches. I think Eric Harris kind of messed up. He tried to come over and break it up, and then Ya-Sin sort of pulled back, and then so he caught it, but
so Eric Harris is still in the National Football League.
That's right. He's on the team. So you talked about having an older safety, and they still got one.
They're going to need a different one. So I thought Eric Harris was washed up today. 6 years ago. Okay. Well, that's fun. Okay. T.O.'s kid coming through. Listen, I will forgive any Bay Area sports fans for thinking that nepotism works after Clay and Steph Curry. Like, the Warriors, they got it.
Shanahan.
That's a good example. McCaffrey. So, you know.
Yep.
Nature versus nurture. Sometimes nature wins.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying. Okay. I want to go through a couple of things here from the sickos before we get out of here. Giannis, I heard Hargrave has owned Banks in practice. Any thoughts?
I don't know about that. Maybe he did well in one-on-ones. I missed the big boys in the trenches today, so I didn't see that. I mean, if it was on that pressure that Brock threw that last interception, then that's fair. But owned him, I don't know. Hey, listen, you're not going to catch everything. Maybe he's been dominating. I haven't seen it that
way.
Just
say you don't know, Jake. It's okay. Well, I'll be there tomorrow. We'll have four eyes on it, or maybe three, and one goes a little loose. Who's to say? 49ers throwback, legendary sicko. Any changes on the defense? Are you seeing the cover three that we thought? Like, are we getting any? You getting any nuance?
Nothing wild so far. I mean, it's early. I think Shanahan said like yesterday, like their installs aren't like they haven't even installed everything, you know? Okay. So they're going basic. They blitzed a couple times. They got cooked when they blitzed on a run, okay. Just going in the blitzing against the wrong look. I think they've been pretty basic so far.
Okay. Now this is 49ers faithful forever. Heaven forbid we lose the faithfulness at any point. Heard Latu was and still is cheeks at practice. First off, thanks to 49ers faithful forever for using the correct terminology. Cheeks, a favorite here.
He has caught the balls that have come his way. He has not done any, like he's gotten a couple balls below 5 yards after the line of scrimmage and caught them. Outside of that, I have not seen much from him. Not to say good or bad, just
better. Nothing from Latu. Okay. Sean Separd pointing out, hey, 49ers played a lot of games recently. The Pats and the Chiefs played a lot of games as well. They had Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes. I think we're all very high on Brock Purdy, at least here on this show, and I imagine amongst the sickos because we actually watch the games. But oh boy, you know.
I got one. This is a good one. So there was a fight today. Fight of camp.
Hell yeah.
Between Jarrett Kingston and T.Y. McGill. I think just based on those names alone, you can guess about where my rating's going to be. It was, I'll give it a 1.7 out of 10.
Yeah, that doesn't seem like a very fun fight.
It was the entire offensive line collapsing, allowing a run stuff on Cody Schrader, getting upset. Don't get mad. Don't get mad because you're getting cooked and then fight. And then apparently they both fell on the ground and it was over quick. I guess if you're Kingston and McGill, like your guys are on the bubble, like you don't really want to, shouldn't really be fighting for more than a second.
They got to show that they want it.
It was underwhelming.
Okay. The Cody Schrader minute. What have we seen from the SEC's best running back?
What a so stallion. Kyle Juszczyk was asked today about him, or Larry asked him, and he's like, I love Cody Schrader. This guy's awesome. He works so hard. He looks great. Like, you know, he's having to go with like the worst offensive line you've ever seen.
Oh my God.
And so sometimes it collapses on him, but when he gets out in space, like he's got a little giddy up. I love him. He's looking good.
If they get rid of them, if I will cry, I will actually cry.
I know you will.
Let me have this. Just let me have one thing, Kyle.
Real quick, no. To the last part.
Has Mitchell... suggestion from Invader 49er is that Schrader's going to make the roster and they maybe trade Mitchell. I mean, that's a suggestion I've made a lot around the draft, and I was told flatly they're not shopping him.
He looks great. He looks great. Mitchell and looks good. I think it's the last year with him. Let him ride. I think...
What about like a JP Mason?
Yeah, they rave about him too. He looks good. I think he always gets talked about as like looking better than I think he looks, but he looks good. I think Schrader is going to be interesting. It'll see what happens with Garendo. I think they really want to get
pretty
Garendo
bad
in hammy. Camp.
Pretty bad yeah. hammy injury though.
I think the entirety of camp expected. I think if Garendo, it might just be a PUP thing, you know. But I think they do want him to play. So we'll see. We'll see how they handle that. If they maybe go like 5 running backs off the cut day, and then they immediately IR Garendo as opposed to PUP where he can't come back during the year. I think he's got so much athleticism. I think they might want to do it that way. We'll see. But I don't think they want to lose Schrader. I don't think so.
They'll have to have an agreement with somebody, and they'll have to store him at the extended stay America for an extra day. What are they at the Hilton right there? What do you mean? I don't know.
Hilton.
But they just keep him there. Yeah. They just keep him in the Hilton. You know, never have to ask any questions. What was the name? Did we figure out the name of the goddamn Texans quarterback that was just constantly on the team?
No.
Stinson?
Nope. Not ringing any bells.
Okay. I'll find it later. All right, Jake, I'll be at practice tomorrow. So
yes, I'll see you there. And then I'm off to the great Denver.
The great land of Denver. Rocky Mountain High. Have a banquet for me, baby. Right. Okay. We will talk. Bye.
Appreciate you, folks.